agenda. The mere questioning of how Israel uses the funds, whether military aid is being actively used to sustain its illegal occupation of Palestine, finance illegal settlements, fund annexation of Palestinian land, or violate Palestinian human rights is a major taboo.
I ask for the U.S. to stop aiding Israel, because if Israel is getting this power from the U.S., then nothing will change. There will always be violence. There will always be killing. There will always be this continuation of, like you know what, just hatred amongst people.
So the next step is on the American government. In my opinion, they're completely complicit with the $3.8 billion in military aid they give to Israel every year. The American government could leverage that aid to have them end the blockade on Gaza immediately.
Despite increasing protests against U.S. aid provided to Israel, Washington still insists on serving as the regime's main benefactor. It's hard to imagine if Israel could afford the heavy economic burden of continuing their occupation of neighboring Arab lands, such as the costs of maintaining the military forces in the territories, the construction of illegal settlements, and the expanded infrastructure to bypass autonomous Palestinian population centers without U.S. financial support. It's even harder to imagine if the regime could survive without generous aid coming straight from American taxpayers' pockets.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm your host, Muzaffar Haider. Here in the studio today, we have with us Sayyid Mahdi and Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, we've just witnessed a war in which the Palestinian resistance actually overcame and defeated and vanquished the Zionists, Israel, the cancerous entity of Israel, rather. Now, the question I'd like to ask is, there have, and this is something that you raised in the previous episode as well, that there have been conflicts going on for the last 70 plus years. So what makes this particular conflict different? I mean, really, what was the difference? We saw missiles coming from one side to the other and missiles going back. Is this not what we have seen throughout the history of what they refer to as the Palestine-Israel conflict? We're going to Sheikh Ali.
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, first of all, we have to, and I know I use this word myself, conflict. Conflict is between two legitimate parties, right? Those who have something to give and take.
Ooh,
and lose.
You just... You
the Zionist regime never was a legitimate entity. It doesn't have a right to be in any conflict, let alone be at conflict with Palestine. So that's something, you know, as a side note. But unfortunately, for the lack of better word, we'll just say, you know, the war, the conflict, the fight. When we look at the Zionist regime, right, throughout the history, and I know we don't have time to go into all of it, right? If you start from the inception of the Zionist regime since 1948, you know how Arabs fought against the Zionist regime, yep. And they were defeated. You know, that whole Arabism, right, pan-Arabism, some called it, they were defeated, right? It kept going and going up until we hit the early 2000s when the war against Gaza was waged. And it's, I think, the first time really, like, when the world saw that Palestinians were victorious. So from 1948 up until 2008.
Wow.
Right. This is the first time when the world saw and felt and realized that, okay, no, the resistance in Palestine, you know, it's bearing fruits. Up until that time, everybody was like, resistance is just, you know, a waste of time, energies, resources.
My God, you're right. Because And success drives. Mm-hmm. So this means that the resistance is going to continuously get stronger.
Right.
There may have been some people inside Palestine and outside as well who thought, well, this resistance is bearing no fruits. We're exactly. having no successes.
Exactly.
Why are we fighting?
And
there's no
that
point.
Included friends and hypocrites, right? Mm. Hypocrites who just didn't want to fight, you know. Mm. They were there too. But even friends, they came to that conclusion, except for the core of the Islamic resistance, which was the Islamic leadership. Since after the Islamic Revolution in Iran, Imam Khomeini and Rahbar, they never changed their stance.
Yeah.
Imam Khomeini for the entire of his life.
I was actually just looking through a book of Imam Khomeini's on Palestine, and his opinions are exactly what Rahbar is saying today. I mean, it's the same.
And they never
thing.
Changed in the middle. You know, it's not like Imam Khomeini started something, and then since we saw so many defeats and, you know, the morale come down, and Rahbar, he goes around and changes his stance, and then, you know,
it's all
after 2008, it picks up again. It was not like that.
No, no, it's always been Islamic unity. Leadership. Resistance.
Yes.
Unity and resistance.
That's for Islamic leadership, that's what it was, right? Mm. For general masses out there, for analysts, for, you know, they started to believe in resistance after 2008, which is actually, in fact, 13 years ago, right? Now, this recent onslaught on Palestine, it resulted in a very shameless defeat for the Zionist regime. Again, Zionist regime that was so used to of winning, being on the victorious side since 1948. Everything they wanted, they did it. Right? From occupying to, you know, demolishing the homes and from exiling people to, you know, raping women, you know, killing children, bombing hospitals, unchecked, right? Through the support of the United States of America and Britain and their cohorts. Now, in 2006, with the Hezbollah war, 2008, with the Gaza war, the Zionist regime, first time ever, had to face a public humiliation where they were defeated at the hands of not governments, not countries, just resistance groups through guerrilla fights and through very, you know. Now, they realized that, okay, they're not as strong as they were thinking they were. After 2008, they have been regrouping, re-energizing, re-strategizing, because they remember 2006 and 2008, right? Those two wars where they were defeated. So they're like, okay, we are really going to flatten Palestine this time around, yeah? So they've been planning. Right. They've been, you know, getting all their equipment up to date, you know, and trainings and this and that and plans. And they launched this war after all this planning.
Yeah, when you say it like that, that is such an eye opener. I mean, it's so true. They were defeated by Hezbollah 2006. This time, when they were attempting to attack Palestine, I mean, it must have been like, okay, we are going to go in and completely brutalize and destroy it. We're going to punish them, in fact.
Exactly. In 2008, they were defeated by these same Palestinians, right? So after that, this is that major war that broke out. Again, initiated by the Zionist regime. This means they were prepared with their Iron Dome, with their cutting-edge technology, with all that pride and, you know, tons of trillions of dollars pumped into their military arsenal and equipment, right? What happens? In 12 days, they're on their knees wanting to do a truce. This is what the world just
You know, it's really...
This is how this war is different.
Really, really fascinating, because so many people have kind of lost faith in Israel. So many of those Zionists, they're actually just leaving the occupied territories now. They're going back to their homes in America and Europe, back to where they came from.
Oh, yeah? I saw a report by RT.
Israel's really... And the politicians of Israel, they're really trying to save face. So they came up with this superhero called Iron Dome. Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was so laughable. It was so funny. They're trying to restore this. You know, no, we're strong, guys. We're strong. And the world is just laughing at them. So they posted it on Twitter, and everybody on Twitter just jumped on the bandwagon, just attacking and
mocking them. One more point before you go
to
say it.
Yep.
This Iron Dome, too, you know, it's being said that 10% of the missiles, it couldn't stop, but 90% of it did. This is a flat-out lie. This is being said by those who are on Israel's side.
Mm-hmm.
The mouthpieces of Israel are saying that 10% came in, 90% were obstructed by the Iron Dome. This is a flat-out lie. I just want everybody to know out there. At least, I believe, you know, very... If you look at it as a third person, not as a, you know, party, at least 50% of them got across, and they did the damage.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Yeah, just on that note as well, the types of missiles that were provided, the Badr 5 missiles to Palestine, were a special type of missile, which actually were designed to explode in the sky. And so it was the shrapnel that would come down that would actually destroy infrastructure and hurt the Zionists. And so even the Iron Dome, if it was able to intercept, it still didn't have its effect of preventing casualties because they were designed to explode in the sky anyway. So, yeah, very good point. Syed, how did this make you feel? I mean, all of this is going on. We're talking about it in such an excited way. I can see you in the corner of my eye kind of smiling gleefully. I mean, I'm curious to find out how you feel or how it made you feel.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It's interesting that there were three words that come to my mind when it comes to how this war, this 12-day war, you know, at least made me feel as I was following it for these 12-plus days. The first one, I'll say the three, and then I'll talk a little bit about them. The first one is anger. The second one is disappointment, and the third one is hope. So as far as anger, the anger, of course, stems from the witnessing holy sanctuaries being defiled. Anger stems from these innocent children dying. Anger stemming from innocent women dying. Peaceful protesters being attacked for no reason other than them being together and wanting to defend themselves and their lives and their property. You know, anger at children, young children. The one that's very famous is the 3 or 4 or 5-year-old child who was being pulled out from under the rubble of buildings destroyed by Zionist airstrikes. The second here is disappointment. Disappointment at the fact that global leaders and leaders all across the world were silent. They have been silent in the face of 70-plus years of Zionist crimes against humanity and against the Palestinians. They have been deathly silent, never condemning Israel. And matter of fact, in this current 12-day war, we saw that many countries tried to bring forth, you know, a proposal to condemn Israeli war crimes, to condemn the Zionist war, to stop the war. But interestingly, it was the United States of America that prevented any kind of proposal from even coming up to be discussed.
And so sometimes it's worse. They don't not condemn Israel.
Right.
They condemn it weakly. And that's even worse because that makes some of the public
The most, I was going to say hate, let me just say it. It's that balance policy.
The both
parties, you know, they have something good about them and something bad about them. They both have some sort of a right. And no, there's not supposed to be. And this seems, you know, especially for those who claim or consider themselves to be academic, you know, they're the ones who push this whole, you know,
the
balance
BBC
thing.
BBC is the master at doing that. This impartiality. No, we're not being biased. Both sides are attacking. Man,
just by saying that, you're being biased.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus an occupier, and you're saying both sides are at fault. Yeah. This is being biased.
Imagine, like, if there was a huge, huge, bulky kid in a class, right, and he goes up to some little pipsqueak girl, starts punching her in the face, and the teacher says, and the girl starts crying and shouting back, and then the teacher says, "No, you're both at fault. You shouldn't have shouted back." I mean, that's what these people are doing. It's ridiculous.
It really is, and it causes a lot of shame. It causes a lot of disappointment to the people watching these things on television and to the people knowing, you know, that that there is silence at such a great level. And like you said, not just silence, but weakly condemn. Or not just weakly condemn. In this case, where the United States stopped a proposal from coming forth, They didn't even let others speak about it. So it's interesting, is not only do they themselves remain silent on the issue, they also make others remain silent on the issue. It's really very disappointing. And what was even worse in this last part about disappointment is the fact that the United States was sending aid to the Zionist regime while this 12-day war was going on. Hmm. You know, how can people expect the United States of America to be an honest broker in this, you know, Palestinian issue when this is the way they act?
I don't think they even pretend to be a broker anymore. Back in the day, yeah, they would say, like, you know, we send this much aid to Palestinian authorities, which, again, are their puppets, and they try to play out this broker role. But I don't think they're even pretending this anymore, right? Especially after the deal of the century, right? It was very clear how they have a full-on plan to just completely wipe Palestine and Palestinians and deprive them of their rights. Yeah. If they have to live in their own lands and that region, they have to live there as a second-class or maybe third-class or maybe fourth-class citizen. They don't have no rights, right? They can't travel. Yeah. They're not going to have... And we talked about deal of the century before here, too. It's just the three of us, right? They don't have right to defend themselves. They don't have right to, you know, arm themselves. All of the diplomatic relationships are going to be in the hands of Israel and so on and so forth. And this is United States of America playing the ball here.
Absolutely.
They are not a broker anymore. Mm. That phase is gone. That ended like 10 years ago or something.
Sid Mehdi, the clock is ticking.
Yeah, the last word here, because I want to do it so we don't have to go to another episode, is hope. So we had anger, we had disappointment, and the last word is hope. Hope in the Palestinian people, especially how we saw that they put up such a beautiful fight, a beautiful resistance, and the balance of power, as Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei says, has swung in the favor of Islam. Mm. Hope in people of the region that they are becoming awake and they are moving forwards towards this common goal of humanity, which is the freedom of Palestine. And finally, hope in people that are all across the world who we have seen have stood up in solidarity with Palestine more so than ever before.
That's all we have time for today. We hope that you enjoyed and benefited from the show, from myself and from our dear, beloved, fantastic guests. We bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye. A symphony of nature. Oh, it's taking my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us start the day by pondering on an aphorism from Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Incapacity is a catastrophe. Endurance is bravery. Abstinence is riches. Self-restraint is a shield against sin. And the best companion is submission to Allah's will.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
The light.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonios has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long. Two British artists have brought a combination of fun, art, and environmental concerns to the sidelines of the G7 summit. They have created a modern-day version of famous sculpture carved into America's Mount Rushmore. This time, it's called Mount Recyclemore. Joe Rush and Alex Rackage have made a sculpture of G7 leaders with electronic waste. They say their major goal is to raise awareness about the amount of unrecycled tech and gadgets, the damage they cause to the environment, and the ways to combat the issue internationally.
Well, what I'd like them to do, the leaders of the G7 conference, is I'd like them all to talk to each other and work out a plan that isn't just shifting the problem from one country to another, you know, but actually is a plan that we all work on together, which is how to deal with this waste. And how to stop producing so much waste and how to recycle things. And all these issues have got to be dealt with globally. They can't be dealt with nationally because that's where the problem is. So we need them all to get together, like we put them together here, and deal with the problem.
The United Nations says 53 million tons of electronic waste are generated annually all over the world. It estimates that the amount of the waste will double in less than 30 years. If that happens, electronic waste would become the fastest growing waste stream in the world. Advanced robots are increasingly helping humans in a variety of innovative ways. Now they have found a place in the healthcare system and will help nurses and doctors stay safe during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can do all kinds of things for elderly people. I can visit with people and brighten their day with social stimulation, entertain and help guide exercise, but also can do talk therapy, take bio readings and help healthcare providers assess their health and deliver treatments.
Grace, which is the newest humanoid robot to join the healthcare fleet. This intelligent machine can take temperatures and record other vital signs of patients. It has been designed in a way to also interact with the elderly and those isolated by the pandemic. Grace is a new prototype of celebrity humanoid robot, Sophia, created by a robotic team in Hong Kong.
So we designed Grace to look professional in a healthcare setting. So that would mean so that she would resemble the sort of human-like appearance of healthcare staff. And so then this would facilitate more natural interactions. A human-like appearance facilitates trust and facilitates a natural engagement because we're wired for human face-to-face interactions. That's just the way human beings are.
Hansen, while standing between Sophia and Grace, also said that both robots could speak different languages. He said Grace's creation was aimed at relieving the burden of frontline hospital staff dealing with COVID-19 patients. The company is planning a mass production of Grace and offers them to the market by August. The cost of making this robot is similar to a luxury car, but the cost is likely to decrease once the company begins manufacturing it in its thousands. A tiny worm has wriggled back to life after lying frozen for 24,000 years in the permafrost land of northern Siberia. The organism was recovered from soil samples taken from 3.5 meters below the ground in Russia's Yakutia region. It's a multicellular organism that can withstand extreme cold. This ancient worm has broken the record for the longest living abeloid rotifer worm. Previous research suggests that it could survive for a decade when frozen. Earlier, scientists also discovered 30,000-year-old microscopic worms from northern Siberia.
A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Erromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers. Iranian capital Tehran has hosted a festival of cake sculptors. The event showcases delicious sweets that are carved into eye-catching sculptures. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's not a piece of cake to bake a sculpture, but pastry chefs here have made it.
and the fourth festival of cake sculptures in Iran, sugar craft artists from across the country have come under one roof in Tehran to cast their spell on these sweets and carve a wide range of fascinating 3D figures out of them. From this tasty coronavirus to this beautiful angel that is picking up the only eatable trash in the world.
Here you can see this angel, which represents the innocent heart of labor children, collecting pieces of trash that contain some of the simplest dreams of a labor child, such as quality food, books, and toys.
My cake is made based on what we call installation art. I have put together iconic structures and monuments of Iran, but when you take a look at them from a special angle, you can see Iran's map.
Some of the cake sculptures here have really pushed the envelope of the art of sculpting, like this bust that shows the 13th century Persian poet Rumi, surrounded with a heavenly garden that's decorated with intricate and mind-boggling details. It took its creator almost a month to finish it.
In the middle, I have put the bust of Rumi, who we refer to as Maulana in Iran. He's holding his most significant verse work, Masnavi Manavi. The garden I created around him and the birds here all are inspired by his poems.
Organizers say they hold the festival every year to modernize the confectionery industry and combine it with fine arts to make it more appealing to the public.
500 works are showcased here in four sections. Bust cakes, wedding cakes, cookie cakes, which are made using royal icing, and the fourth section is cream cakes. The major goal is to scout for talents who can revolutionize the confectionery industry.
Some of the participants in the festival are pastry chefs who try to make their cakes look better, and others are actually pro sculptors who want to bake a figure instead of carving it. Perhaps it's easy to tell who is who by taking a glimpse at their cakes. But sweets will win the competition. They're both delicious and delicate.
It takes ultimate care and a knack for both bakery and artistry to be able to transform sweets into statues. In fact, they're both so spectacular and yummy that make you want to have the cake and eat it too. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Nowadays, phone addiction is causing an increasing number of accidents worldwide. The Korean engineer has come up with a creative, although satirical, way to tackle that issue. Pang Min-wook is a 28-year-old industrial engineer or designer. He has invented a robotic eyeball people can wear to avoid accidents when using their phones while walking. The device is strapped to the forehead and opens its eyelids when the users lower their heads. The third eye then beeps in warning when the user comes within 1 or 2 meters of an obstacle. Pang says his device is not a solution to the issue and hopes that people will understand the severity of their reliance on gadgets when they see their third eye.
As the coronavirus continues to wreak havoc in India, some auto rickshaw drivers have turned their three-wheelers into makeshift ambulances to provide patients with first aid services.
Those are patients.
In New Delhi, the municipal ambulances are often occupied. There are also some very narrow alleys or built-up areas that are inaccessible by regular-sized ambulances. In these cases, our makeshift ambulances came in handy then. We attend to people in need with oxygen cylinders.
Mishra, who started the Rickshaw Ambulance Initiative, says his center attends around 1,200 calls per day. He says rickshaw volunteers transport roughly 150 patients during peak hours. The brave drivers work 12-hour shifts and mainly serve people with mild symptoms. They wear full protective gear, including face shields, while on duty. The three-wheeler ambulances are easily identifiable by the large printed image of the fleet and emergency call numbers. Mishra says the fleet will continue running with all its might until the coronavirus is under full control in India. in Russia, drone enthusiasts have gathered in the capital, Moscow, to show off their technological creativity in a racing competition. The participants created their own drones and made changes to the models right on the site where the competition was held to improve their chances to win the contest. The goal was for the participants to complete the track in the shortest possible time. Participants say the interesting thing about the competition is that it's cheaper than other games.
It's a lot of fun. From the outside, it may not be so clear, but when you're inside it, it becomes really fun to talk, race with the competitors, learn from their experience some new technological things. As for the high cost, it is expensive, but when compared with the snowboards and skis, it is really cheaper, but more expensive than knitting.
In 2017, the International Federation of Aeronautics, or FAI, announced drone racing as an official sport. In 2018, Russia's sports ministry included drone racing in all Russian register of sports with a class code F3U following the FAI classification.
A science professor has released spectacular drone footage of lava streaming from an Icelandic volcano. Sjöran Johnson flew a drone over the volcano 2 months after it started erupting. He captured close-up shots of lava bubbling in its crater in the southwest of Iceland's capital. The volcanologists say that they have no idea how long this eruption will continue, adding that magma could flow for years. Iceland is home to dozens of active volcanoes. Volcanic landscapes have turned into a tourist attraction in the Scandinavian country.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Two Russian cosmonauts have conducted spacewalk outside the International Space Station to prepare an old docking module for disposal. The duo spent more than 7 hours outside the ISS to wrap up preparations for the eventual disposal of the Pris docking compartment. According to NASA officials, the Russian cargo freighter will remove the two-decade-old module from the orbiting laboratory later this summer. Both the cargo ship and the Pris will burn up in the atmosphere above the Pacific Ocean. The orbiting Pris will clear the way for the arrival of a new Russian multipurpose laboratory module named Nuka, meaning science in Russian. Nuka is scheduled to launch on July the 15th this year. Wednesday's operation was the sixth spacewalk in 2021 in support of the space station assembly, maintenance, and upgrades.
A rare albino baby elephant that was rescued from poachers in South Africa has found a new home with a welcoming herd. The calf, named Han Yisa, was caught in a snare in the Kruger National Park when she was only 4 months old. She suffered several nasty wounds, including one to her mouth. Han Yisa remained trapped in the snare for 4 days before being rescued and taken to a shelter especially built for elephants northeast of Johannesburg. All the other elephants there are orphans too.
Each female that we had has a baby. So except for them, all of the others are orphaned. And I think that is part of the reason why they accept these orphans, because they know how it feels, you know, and they become actually, you know, the mother figures for them.
The calf has learned to adapt to the new life. She lies under the shadow cast by bigger elephants protect herself from getting sunburned. The shelter says if the herd grows too big for the area, she and other elephants will be released into the wild.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, peace and salutations of Allah the Almighty be upon all of you on this auspicious day. Yes, today is the commemoration of the birth anniversary of Lady Fatima Masuma, peace be upon her. Congratulations to all ladies, to all Muslim women, to all girls.
Ya Fatima, ishfa'i li fil jannah, fa inna laki 'inda Allahi sha'nan min ash-sha'n. Ya Fatima, ishfa'i li fil jannah, fa inna laki 'inda Allahi sha'nan min ash-sha'n.
Today, Saturday, is the first of Zilqa'dah, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 22nd of the month of Khordad, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 12th of June, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Accept our congratulations on this auspicious day.
Feeling so good, smiles and greetings everywhere. Eid al-Mubarak to everyone out there. Whole families, they gather and celebrate. Today's the day, so come on, no time to waste. Sometimes the world takes us so far, though miles apart. Today you're in my heart. Eid al-Sa'id, let's enjoy this happy day. Eid al-Mubarak, come on, let's celebrate. Eid al-Sa'id, let's enjoy this happy day. Eid al-Mubarak, come on, let's celebrate, celebrate, let's celebrate. Allah, Allah, thank you for this day.
Today marks the auspicious birthday anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Masuma, peace be upon her, and it has also been designated as National Daughters Day in Iran. National Daughters Day has been established in order to emphasize the role of women and girls in every aspect of society, and so Iranian women can become more familiarized with the unique personality of Hazrat Fatima Masuma alayha salam. Iranian women have always played a major role during all the different stages of the Islamic Revolution, both in the past and at the present time. The Islamic Revolution has created favorable conditions for women's advancement in the different areas, especially in the field of education. This includes improvement to literacy rates and more women participating in elementary as well as higher education. Today, women even outnumber men in the high education sector, a trend which is called a true change in terms of women's role and advancement of women. Dear brothers and sisters, all Muslim women, all Muslim girls, we offer our congratulations on the commemoration of birthday anniversary of Lady Fatima, peace be upon her.
Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says paradise has 8 doors, and 3 doors of paradise are towards and a woman from my children will die. Her name is Fatima, daughter of Musa alayhi salam. And then Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, because of her shafa'at, our Shias will go to Jannah. Imam Sadiq al-Salam is telling it in advance. My haram and the haram of my children is home.
And this one is from Imam al-Ridha, salamullah alayhi, that he says, Man zaraha falahu al-jannah. The Imam says, just merely visiting her is going to result in a person entering paradise. Ayatullah Bahjat, the days that we wanted to see him, you could always find him at a certain time in the haram of Hadar Ma'asuma. Until his old age, he was like over 80 years old, he would come every single day. Imam Khomeini made sure every day he pays a visit. And some people objected to that. They said, you're a marja, it's not appropriate for a marja to be visiting the haram every day. Once a week, once a month, that's sufficient. You don't need to do so much. Imam Khomeini's response to that is very interesting. He says that you don't know who she is.
As Muslims, when we go to the holy shrines of the holy personalities like Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, like the infallible imams, we read a special text that is known as the ziyarah text. So we have the special ziyarah text for Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, for the infallible imams, for Lady Zahra peace be upon her, and also we have a general ziyarah text for the children, for the righteous children and offsprings of, the infallible imams. But one important point regarding Lady Ma'asuma salamullah alayha is the fact that we have a special ziyarah text narrated to us by no one but Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam, our eighth imam, the holy brother of Lady Ma'asuma salamullah alayha. According to the narrations addressing one of the Shia scholars from Qom, Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam told him about the holy shrine of Lady Ma'asuma salamullahi alayha, and then he taught him how he should visit the holy shrine of Lady Ma'asuma salamullahi alayha. So to have a special ziyarah text is one of the virtues of Lady Ma'asuma salamullahi alayha.
The city of Qom, the city of knowledge. Qom is the city of knowledge. It is the city of jihad, the city of insight. This is to say, Qom became the center of most superior Islamic and divine teachings. Thanks to the presence, selfless efforts, and insight of great religious scholars, a source of knowledge was created in this region, which benefited the entire world of Islam. The presence of the honorable instructors, luminaries, scholars, and seminarians of Qom Seminary has made this city great. There is no doubt that Hazrat Fatima Masum alayha salam played an indisputably important role in helping Qom reach a high status. Qom become Qom. She played an undeniable role in helping this historical and religious city gain prominence. Through her journey among the companions and friends of the infallible imams, peace be upon them all, and by traveling through different cities and sowing the seeds of knowledge and wilaya, during her journey, especially after arriving in Qom, this honorable lady, Lady Masuma, who had been educated by the Holy Prophet's household, caused Qom to shine as the main stronghold of the teachings of the Holy Prophet's household during that dark reign of oppressors. She made this city a stronghold for transferring the light of knowledge and the teachings of the Holy Prophet's household to the East and West and the West of the world of Islam. On behalf of my colleagues, on today's special from IRIB English Radio, we offer our congratulations on the anniversary of Lady Fatima Masuma's birthday.
As-salamu alayk, as-salamu alayk, as-salamu alayk, ya bint Rasulillah.
فاطمة وخديجة السلام عليك يا بنت أمير المؤمنين السلام عليك يا بنت الحسن والحسين السلام
Honoring the daughters in Islam. When Islam came, women were in a humiliated state. They led a painful, wretched life with no rights and obligations that surpassed their abilities. A woman would spend her entire life from her cradle to the grave in misery and suffering. Islam emerged and raised women from their appalling and disgraceful reality to a respectable life. In Islam, women are beloved whether as pampered young daughters, endeared sisters, adored wives, or honored mothers. However, enemies of Islam regard the westernizations of Muslim women to be a highly important goal, perhaps due to their primary role in raising the young generation and bringing them up according to the Islamic creed, manner, acts of worship, and ethics. In order to achieve their goal, they lure women, promising their so-called liberation and empowerment.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. We find that the females, both ladies and girls and daughters and our sisters play a very significant role in our communities. Please note carefully that even in the history of world civilizations, it's indicated that, in the ancient and even primitive civilizations, men were people who went outdoors, mostly for hunting, and the whole families, even in primitive families, the family was organized and was administered by ladies. So we find that, based on such studies, many people believe that the advent of agriculture and coming up with the agricultural produces was initially a job of ladies, not men. So we find that, this important aspect of, the presence of ladies in all human communities plays a great role because it contributes family warmth and family interest and being integrated and gives a sense of integrity to men. And it's because of the presence of ladies at home that men have a sense of devotion and rapt attention to their families. On the other hand, we find that the ladies are very much, ladies or the female side of the community play a great role in upcoming of another generation, not only biologically, but also culturally and ideologically. We find that in many communities in the world, ladies are respected. For example, in typical Muslim countries, in Muslim nations and cultures, ladies are very, very respected.
That was all for today's special. Again, on the occasion of birthday anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Masuma, I have a great pleasure to convey my warmest congratulations to all of you, dear friends. Fi amanillah.
Children are wearing new clothes, bright bright colors fill the streets. Their faces full of laughter, their pockets full of sweets. Let us rejoice in thee. This is the day of Eid.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.